This is Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello, and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Trials and Triumphs of 2020.
Oh, Jules, it has been a year.
It really has. It feels like it's been about 5 or 6 years, actually.
It really does. It's certainly been one of the longest and strangely shortest years of my life.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a really long time because it's been, you know, as we'll get into in a moment, certain things have been dragging on and on and on, and they're likely to drag on a bit longer, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But it's felt really short because no one's managed to go anywhere or do anything, which hasn't broken the year up.
Yeah, it's sort of everything sort of dragged into an endless cycle, and you blinked and suddenly it was, you know, it was May, and the next thing you knew it was October.
Yeah, basically, I mean, I think I've just about given up waiting for the year to really get started now, because I felt like all year I've been waiting for it to really get started.
Yeah, well, I just remember very foolishly in March thinking, this'll be over by September. Oh, past Madeleine, your optimism was very misguided.
Yes, very much so. So, for anyone who hasn't somehow been, you know, stranded on a desert island or sleeping under a rock for the past year, there's obviously been a lot going on in 2020, and an awful lot that hasn't gone on in 2020 because it hasn't been able to. I would add a small caveat here, and it's something that I will get into a bit later, and that is beware of the news. And what I mean by that isn't, oh god, everything's manufactured, everything's a conspiracy theory, but when you see something on the news, go and seek out independent sources of verification and check that what's being reported has been reported accurately and you're not just getting a soundbite.
Yeah.
We're ripe for really getting quite angry about things that are inaccurate at the moment, quite understandably, because no one likes to feel this restricted. So yes, well, this is like a general lifestyle guide I would suggest for everyone. This is especially important, I think.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. There was actually, we had an incident of this the other day with one of the local newspapers that had basically misunderstood the statistics of COVID cases in our area and the way that it was sort of all calculated and things like that. And, you know, despite the fact that they put the science in there, because they completely misunderstood how it was meant to be read and how it, you know, how it all worked, they made things out to be a lot worse than they actually were. So it was incredibly inaccurate, despite the fact they're like, here are the, you know, the statistics or whatever, the information. It wasn't understood how it was meant to be measured or things like that. So you know, even with the best intentions, people can report things which are wrong, and titles can be deceiving because they've obviously got to catch the eye. So it's just a good idea in general to kind of, always look for alternative sources as well.
Yeah, absolutely. As a species, we are naturally negatively biased. Now, this is perfectly normal because you benefit from believing 890 times out of 900 that there's something trying to attack you, whereas not believing it that many times is probably going to result in a fatality.
Yeah.
So, you know, as something that started off as a prey species, of course we've still got this hardwired into us. The problem is we apply this to things like the news, which is very much packaged as entertainment. And, you know, we will go for the worst case scenario because anything that is good case scenario or best case scenario isn't newsworthy. So when you say, oh, the news is so depressing, yes, it's marketed that way. Please bear that in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, of course, news, you know, agents are all competing against each other. So they've got to have the one that is the most grabbing and most interesting.
Yeah.
So, always a good idea to bear that in mind. Now, even without the news, it's been a very strange year. I mean, certainly the newspapers have not been short of things to write about.
No, absolutely hasn't. I remember when I was 10, one of my teacher at the time, my first teacher at the convent school, had grown up during the Second World War, and she talked about it quite openly, and, you know, she'd been at an age where she actually really understood what was going on. So I think she'd been my age during the Second World War, and she was saying that one thing she said to her parents was, what do they put on the news when there isn't a war on? Because she couldn't imagine what they wrote about. Yeah. And I suppose, you know, depending on how long this global pandemic goes on, you'll have kids going, what do they write about? What's the news about the rest of the time? So, yeah, these things sort of come around. Yeah, so 2020 got off to a rip-roaring start with a series of fires, bushfires in Australia, which are still going. They had fires in Canada as well, and across the Amazon, which is not great.
No, not great at all.
And we also had any number of storms, which, you know, got as far as the UK as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a bit of an omen when the start of the year is just, we're on fire.
We're on fire and everything's flooding, by the way.
Simultaneously.
And I think I remember a semi-sarcastic comment to you, possibly even on a Dissecting Dragons episode, where I was like, yeah, okay, well, we're still in January, so what's the rest of the year got in store? 2 weeks later.
Well, I just do remember saying, well, this is a bit biblical, isn't it? Before the plague arrived. So,
yes.
Yes.
And obviously since, well, actually it would have been since the end of December last year, but certainly for us here in the UK, since the end of January, the beginning of February, we have been part of this huge global pandemic, which is the largest pandemic that we've had in over 100 years.
Mm. Yeah. And it's had such a profound effect on just the whole way our brains are wired, I think. It comes to the point now that I'm watching movies and I'm like, why are they not social distancing?
I know, I'm finding that with books when I've got someone who's hugging and I'm like, should they be hugging? Of course they should be hugging. There's no pandemic going on here. But yeah, it's just
I like to watch things like Escape to the Chateau, stuff like that, and it's just, you know, we've been rewatching it with family, and you just see them all sort of, it's set in France, so there's, you know, there's lots of kissing on the cheeks and just very kind of welcoming embraces, and every time it happens I'm like, ooh, oh no, wait, this is set in a world before all of this happened.
It does draw you up a bit short, and it's, okay, for a completely frivolous point, I have started using cuticle cream. I don't have manicures. I've never used cuticle cream in my life before, but I'm washing my hands so much.
Yes.
That I'm actually having to use hand cream, and I'm having to do something with my cuticles, which are getting really ragged. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you always, and the thing is, people are like, well, if your hands are starting to fall apart now, then clearly you weren't washing them enough before. Like, no, that's not it. It's that people just, you suddenly are so self-conscious about everything. And, yeah, it's...
I mean, the people are saying you weren't... The people who are saying you weren't washing your hands enough before, I would like to point out that I work with the general public, and even though we put books and things into quarantine for 3 days, you're still handling them. You're still handing them to people. And while you try not to have contact, sometimes it can't be helped. So what you do is you immediately wash your hands, which means I could be washing my hands sort of upwards of 30 times during my working day.
Which is not great for your hands.
No, which is even more than when I was actually helping in surgery. So, just because of the sheer number of people, you wouldn't have seen quite so many people. So, therefore, it would have been, and obviously, you're not using gloves sort of quite rarely in my work, even though we do have gloves. Mm. But you can't use a pair of gloves every time you need to handle a different book. It's just not practical.
Not practical.
It's more practical to wash your hands. So this isn't a complaint. This is just a, oh my god, I'm suddenly having to think about my nails, which is something I've never thought about before.
Yeah, absolutely. at the start of the pandemic, I ordered some replacement for our soap, because rather than just buying lots and lots of new pots of soap, I try to be a little bit conscientious about just buying something that I can refill them with. And I was just like, oh, I'll just get one of these. And what I thought was, you know, maybe about a litre was actually about 2 gallons worth of soap.
So you're swimming in the stuff then.
Yeah. And I was like, well, this will keep us going for a while. And we're actually almost done with one of the whole bottles.
Yeah.
It's almost already gone. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's only been a few months. Strange times. Very, very strange times.
Definitely very strange times. And in addition to, I mean, we haven't even really dug into that, and we're not necessarily going to, but there's been a huge amount of political upheaval this year as well, for many countries, not just for the UK.
Yeah.
And you know, in terms of social political upheaval as well. Now, some of this has been influenced by the fact that people are being fenced in by the conditions of the pandemic, and they're angry and they're scared, they want to organise against something, and some of it's just a case of, it's kind of like this is where the boil has formed and has decided to be lanced.
Yeah.
And even looking at our political leaders, I kind of don't want to be the person who's kind of laughing at our government because they're making a complete pig's ear of it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure anyone's going to do a really, really great job. These are unprecedented times.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm looking at our government and going, yeah, you schemed so hard to get where you are, and now look what you've got.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it must be said, you know, a year of pandemic is going to be difficult enough without having to deal with things like an election change, as they were in, you know, the US, and Brexit, as we are currently in the UK.
Yeah, see, my theory with Brexit is, you know, ultimately it's never really going to happen. It's just, it's going to be this thing that all the following prime ministers inherit, and then once every 4 years a prime minister has to make his pilgrimage across to the mainland Europe to discuss something called Brexit, but no one really knows what it's about anymore, or what it's for, or even how it started.
It's just tradition at this point.
Just tradition.
Yeah, it's certainly been a very, very strange time, and I think the pandemic has ultimately exacerbated a lot of things and a lot of worries. But there have actually been some good things in 2020.
Absolutely. And even just looking at the things we've talked about, so storms, fires, global pandemic, political upheaval, out of that, one thing that really definitely emerges is that people are basically good. Now, if you spend any time on Twitter, you're probably thinking, where is she getting her information? But once again, Twitter, we're negatively biased, so the things you look at most are the things that will flash up most in your feed.
Yeah.
So if you look at something because it's negative and you're kind of going, oh my god, then you'll get shown more of that. And that's on all types of social media. And it's kind of deliberate now, but it wasn't deliberate originally. So you have to bear that in mind. You have to then seek out places. You have to not just stay in your own little echo chamber and get more paranoid and fed up with the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are basically good. If you dig into stories, there's all sorts of really positive things that have happened in the face of tremendously hard circumstances. So, I mean, if we just want to look at the pandemic here in the UK, we're not starting at a disadvantage as, say, places like India might be, or certain places in India, put it that way.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that when we went into lockdown and people were stuck, and you had elderly people who had no family nearby and they were all by themselves, right out in the country where you can't get anywhere and you couldn't really get deliveries, that people banded together in networks to make sure that everybody had a supply of food and they got some sort of company, even if it was just talking through a window kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's hundreds and thousands of examples of that. It's amazing. It's that ultimately when... I know people say when there's a crisis, everybody panics. And actually, that's not what happens. What happens is if there's a crisis, humans go into crisis mode and they start helping each other out. And this is 90% of the time. And that's amazing.
Mm. It is. You're right. Now, we have also seen, obviously, examples of incredibly selfish behaviour. But as, you know, we were saying earlier, the newspapers and stuff do tend to focus on that. And actually, because we are social creatures, it is, just as it's hardwired for us to see the negatives, it's also hardwired for us to take care of one another, because that is essential in our survival. Now, for some people, that has been about taking care of their immediate surroundings, which are their immediate family. But for others, there's been a real sense of community, which has just been boosted, particularly, I think, in more sort of rural areas, as you mentioned, Jules.
Yeah.
And, you know, in areas where people are secluded. I've certainly found that. I've certainly found that, you know, people within the area where my dad lives have just really banded together and have been fantastic and helped each other out. And that's been really, really good, and it's very positive. And I have seen some extraordinary acts of kindness and generosity of people who have been really going the extra mile for others, because life is just that little bit more difficult at the moment. And it does restore my faith in humanity a little bit.
Definitely. And the number of people who... switched roles in order to field calls by, you know, phoning up people who were alone and vulnerable and seeing if they needed any help. Yeah. I mean, I spoke to a couple of people at work and they said they kept phoning me to see if I was okay, and actually I was absolutely fine by myself and it got quite annoying, but I do understand how for someone else who really was by themselves and had nobody, that would actually be a lifeline. This is part of my job, but I've had people who've phoned me and said, I've got nothing to read. And so I've been making deliveries to them of books that I've selected that I think they'll like. And it's a tiny little thing, but if that's someone by themselves, a book is a wonderful company.
Yes, it is. It does make a big difference, even if it's just a 5-minute conversation with somebody. Just about books.
Literally
just...
across their driveway. So you're about 5 metres away, so you're shouting to each other. People are actually having a conversation. And, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Think about all the low-paid workers in zero-respect jobs who suddenly started working through the night to get things on shelves so people had supplies of what they needed on time. And, you know, there was some selfish behaviour where you had NHS workers going and trying to get shopping on their way home from a night shift, which is something I used to do, and finding that everything's gone. But actually, you get shown these stories, but there's not actually that many examples of them. If you really look at it, yes, there's a few. And the minute those few go out, people are shamed into better behaviour.
Yeah.
Because that definitely is something that we do as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I also, I mean, big shout out to all the teachers out there.
Absolutely.
I think, particularly teachers in schools. You know, this isn't just because I'm a teacher, but I mean teachers in schools who have gone above and beyond, and who I think also often go rather underappreciated in terms of the amount of work that they already do, and now all the extras that they've had to do for these children who are going through something so unnatural for their development and upbringing. And these people who've had to basically keep them going whilst also doing their job, you know, whilst doing all of their regular duties, having all these extra things on top. I just think that the people who've gone and done that have been fantastic. And I'm not surprised that quite a few of them are mentally incredibly exhausted now. It is exhausting, but I just want you to know you have my thanks. At the very least.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So ultimately, I'm not suggesting that this pandemic or, you know, the storms and fires, you know, where you had people who were joining voluntary fire services and things and, you know, trying to help with reclamation efforts and things like that, or we're going out and helping people who've been flooded out of their homes and things, which is what we do. We pull together. So I think sometimes we get the news where it says, you know, 100,000 people made homeless by extreme storms. I'm just plucking a figure out of the air. This isn't actually a real statistic. And what it could actually read was 100,000 people assisted by many, many, many neighbours who all banded together to make sure they were safe and had somewhere warm to stay and food while they sorted out the housing. So that is the problem. We go from the, oh, the disaster's happened perspective, which, you know, for survival is useful, but for a community is bad.
Yeah. Well, that's the saying, isn't it? Whenever you see these bad news stories and everything feels bad, look for the helpers.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
because they'll be
extending
there.
On this, extending on this, and I completely understand if you're getting to the end of 2020 and you feel like there's no end in sight for next year either, and you're at the end of your tether. I don't want this to sound like a trite aphorism or anything, but I've found that taking a few minutes to think about things that you are actually grateful for can really help keep you going. It can be little things as well. It doesn't have to be sort of like, well, I'm grateful I'm not dead today. Although that can definitely be one of them. It can be, wow, I'm grateful I really, really enjoyed that book I've just finished reading.
Yeah. This is something that is actually very powerful because this isn't just a, I'm going to force myself to do this. This is actually a sort of about rewiring your brain.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
It does make a massive difference in terms of trying to find the bright side of things and trying to be optimistic about certain things, particularly when things have gone wrong. Now, that's not to say that you have to be bright and optimistic all the time. Personally, I think that would be quite unnatural. And that, you know, negative emotions, as they are so called, have their place and their purpose, so they shouldn't be ignored. But optimism does make a big difference, particularly in such trying times. And as Jules said, it doesn't need to be big things. It can be very, very small things. There was a film, and for the life of me, I cannot remember what it was called, but in it there was a young girl she's sent to live with her aunt, I think it is.
You don't mean Pollyanna, do you?
Yes, I do mean Pollyanna, thank you. Yeah, and she...
Is it the old Hayley Mills one?
Yes, I think so, yeah. She plays sort of the bright side game, doesn't she?
Yes, it's the crutches game, because... She came from quite a poor family, and the one thing she wanted was a doll, and what they sent instead was a pair of crutches. So her father said, well, we're going to play the glad game, and because she was quite disappointed at having crutches and not a doll. And the glad game was, I'm glad I don't actually need to use those crutches.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That was the glad game.
Okay, I mean, it can come across as a bit sort of saccharine, but actually practicing gratitude can do an awful lot for your mental health.
It can. And it is just the small thing. And it is about celebrating the small things and enjoying the small things. Whether that's a good, you know, a good meal, whether that's just sitting down comfortably, whether you've got a fire going, you know, or you've got your heating. And again, it doesn't need to be the big fundamental things of, I'm glad I'm alive, I'm glad I've got lighting, I'm glad I've got water. You know, you can be very glad and grateful for those things, but it's also about saying, oh gosh, that was a good book, or that was a really nice mince pie, or, I'm so glad that we have modern technology so that I could, you know, call my family or things like that. It can just be small things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be small things in a moment. It can be a bird landing on a branch that you just happen to get the opportunity to see, or it can be, you know, a brief respite, you know, 5 minutes of quiet when you're stuck in a flat with four very noisy small children, for example.
Yes. Could be the moment they fall asleep.
Well, yeah. You know, you can be grateful for that half hour you have to yourself, or the 10 minutes, or the 2 minutes, or whatever. I know there are people who are in far more straitened circumstances, and I really don't want to preach to people who are worse off than I am, but, maybe you could be glad about the fact that you're not on a podcast telling people who are worse off than you to be glad, kind of thing. that you can turn every circumstance if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's just about finding those small bits, those small moments, and savouring them.
Yeah.
Because things are a bit rotten, so it's okay to take real pleasure out of the small things that aren't. And once you start to notice them, because I think the other thing is that life is full of small little pleasures, but they're easy to forget.
Yeah, it's the same negative bias that we get with the news, and it's the case of training yourself to recognise the little moments. Because I think that's something that kind of does get peddled to us, this idea that happiness is a state that you must achieve and then hold on to at all costs, rather than happiness is just another thing like everything else that will pass in and out of your life, and you should appreciate it when you've got it.
Yeah, absolutely. That happiness happens in moments, and sort of general contentment is, you know, when you're not feeling miserable all the time, but happiness itself is, yeah, a series of moments. But it's just about what you kind of think back on, so that when at the end of the day you think back on, oh, today I was made to feel happy about, you know, six times, so today's been a happy day. But what happens is we tend to go, well, I had that really bad spell in the afternoon when I felt very bad, and so then suddenly today has been a bad day, you know. So it's just about basically just shifting the way that you think about things. And it does take a little bit of practice, but it is a genuine thing which is taught and exercised by people who are suffering from difficulties with mental health. And it will change your brain chemistry. Now, it's not about denying the negative feelings or saying that they're not real, or sort of saying, I'm fine when you're not. It's basically just about managing your emotions and sort of acknowledging all of them, both the bad, so-called, and the good.
Yeah, it's don't give an undue weighting to the negative or the bad.
Yes.
No, the whole negative bias thing means that we tend to do that. Okay, so before we get on, I've got a list of interesting things that have kind of been buried under all the negative news this year, which hopefully people will find it interesting. But before we move on, I just want to say, look, with the political stuff, a lot of it is quite farcical. I feel like I'm watching a really bad rerun of the Magic Roundabout a lot of the time. And, you know, complete with the music in my head, which is sort of inspires this homicidal rage almost. But I've got to say, you know what? Okay, here you go. Here's one. I'm glad that Trump is no longer president. I know he's fighting against it with all tooth and claw. And you know what? It would actually make my Christmas if he had to be removed from the White House by security. I get that he's playing for time because there's a list a mile long of people who want to indict him for various things, and that's why he's hanging on to the White House so hard. And I'm like, I get all of that, but I'm just appreciating the sheer fact that he did not win. And I'm not even American.
Yeah, absolutely. And sorry to be cruel, but I really, really enjoy that every time I see a picture of Boris Johnson now, he's looking more and more tired.
Slightly more anxious each time.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason I like that is that I think he's finally realised, you know, that he's running a bit of a shit show. It's no longer a thing about laughs. It's no longer just about being in power and, oh, you know, I can sort of push this to the side by reciting, you know, telling a bad joke and reciting some Latin. It's now, oh no, things are actually serious and I've got to do my job.
And I am absolutely not suited for this role at all. Nope. There's nothing like seeing someone who has failed upwards all their life suddenly realizing they're promoted way beyond their abilities. Yes. And the fact that there's no way out. So yes, there's a tiny dash of malicious pleasure there, but occasionally I even almost feel sorry for him. Who is it? It was one of my work colleagues said, yeah, he's a bit like one of those brides who are like really, really focused on the wedding day and then realise there's a marriage behind it and they've got no idea how to deal with that.
Gosh, yes, that's it, isn't it?
That's so like, I've always wanted to be prime minister ever since I was a little boy. It's like, you do realise if you're prime minister, you have to do shit, right?
Yeah.
You don't just get the title and the house.
I mean, again, to be honest, being in power during a pandemic is one of the worst times to be in power. I mean, this is an awful time because no matter what you do, things are going to be bad. So people are going to probably blame you, you know, no matter what you try and do. Personally, I think that he's done a terrible job in handling this pandemic, and that's why we are where we are now. But, you know, it was never going to be an easy year for anybody, whilst also trying to tackle Brexit at the same time. It is a fairly impossible job. That's not me saying therefore they are excused.
They're absolutely,
I don't think,
not
they're excused in the least.
Certainly not, but since Boris kind of authored the entire Brexit thing in the first place with a game of dare with Cameron. So yeah. You reap what you sow on that one. I have no sympathy.
No sympathy whatsoever.
But yes, you know, it's not fair to say, yes, he's the author of all our misery. It's just like, kind of like, no, he's really just the cherry on a really shitty cake with shitty icing.
Yeah. Very.
Anyway, so some good news. Let's do good news. Okay.
First of all,
good news that's come out of the pandemic. Can we just take a moment to appreciate how amazing it is, considering how slowly science and medicine is forced to move most of the time? How quickly we got three plausible and likely to be successful vaccinations within a short period of time, within a year, in fact, less than a year, just by everybody working together and obviously throwing the right amount of money at it. Just think what we could accomplish if we did this all the time, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like if you fund the sciences, good things arrive.
Yeah, if you give them unlimited funding and time and respect, and, you know, let them get on with things. I mean, my mum's just been and had the first injection because she's in a very at-risk category. So, and you know, it's not going to be for everybody because no vaccination is, but the fact that it's happened pretty much within a 9-month period is unbelievable. They're now talking about the fact they might be able to come up with a vaccination against the common cold, which is something that's always been posited could not be cured.
So it's
fantastic. There's other stuff, science-wise, which is definitely interesting. So, for example, in the sunniest parts of the world now, they are now producing solar power in a way that it is cheaper to buy than power created through fossil fuels. In fact, it's so effective, they're 10 years ahead of any mathematical model that projected this happening.
That is fantastic. I did not know that.
No, well, it's good news, you see, so nobody reports it. But it's amazing. And just think what we can do with that. So if they're already 10 years ahead just from sort of the last couple of years and it's culminated this year, how far ahead are we going to be in another 2 years? Could we finally be moving away from fossil fuels entirely, which is something we all know we need to do? So this is amazing.
That is incredible. That's brilliant news. I did hear, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was a statistic about actually Scotland using renewable energy and how that has also been going incredibly well. So that is very, very positive, particularly in a year where people have been stuck indoors even more than usual and have probably had to use more resources. It's incredible that we are also making progress and taking steps towards renewable energy forms and sort of, you know, quitting the fossil fuels, which is brilliant. That's fantastic.
Definitely. Okay, so more science-y type stuff, but a group of scientists who've been working on sort of the deterioration of eyesight, have found a way to reverse aging and reverse deteriorated vision in optic nerves. And what they've been doing is adding genetically modified cells to optic nerves, and they've found that not only does it repair all the damage done by sort of aging and other injury type stuff to these optic nerves, restoring full eyesight, they found that it actually makes the cells younger. So it actually reverses the aging process of that particular part of the body.
That is incredible.
And nobody knows about it.
Nobody, that's fantastic. Wow. What an incredible advancement, because, you know, this is, we're concentrating on the eyes right now, but, you know, who knows what the next step is in regards to that. And I mean, the eyes on them, you know, themselves, that's just mind-bogglingly awesome.
Definitely.
It can just change so many people's lives. That's brilliant.
And while we're talking about the field of science and medicine, I'm going to dumb this down, not because I don't think you'll be able to follow me, but it's going to be a very long podcast if I explain it. Basically, one of the things that's been difficult in terms of genetic manipulation studies in, you know, to sort of, if you're thinking about things like CJD and Alzheimer's and motor neuron syndrome, things like that, things where you have a serious genetic defect that causes disease, multiple sclerosis as well. Part of what the problem is that your protein structures have kind of disintegrated. Your proteins are supposed to form very, very specific shapes. And the real problem in curing this has been that nobody has been able to solve the protein folding problem. When I say protein folding, it's proteins forming the shape they're supposed to form. That's actually been cracked this year by an AI.
Really?
Yeah, it's been solved. So they've now solved the protein folding problem, which could have huge implications for things like Alzheimer's, for, you know, improving genetic diseases and things like that. It's early days yet, but it's been done.
I'm honestly flabbergasted. Like, I actually... this sounds really silly. I actually just teared up then.
Yeah. And it could have...
That could make... So, I mean, not could, that will make an incredible difference to so many people's lives.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And yeah, it was done by artificial intelligence, which is amazing as well, because you've already got to the point where something has created the mathematical model because you've created it to solve maths that you can't do in your head kind of thing. Again, I'm oversimplifying it, but it's amazing. Why are we not talking about this as well?
That is just brilliant. Oh, I'm so glad you brought all these up, because honestly...
Well, it could have been a depressing episode otherwise.
Yeah, that is just fantastic.
Okay, please go on.
Well, I was going to say that there's also been some fantastic news in terms of the natural world as well.
Yep.
In terms of conservation too.
Yes, definitely.
I do know one thing that has delighted me was that, you know, after the fires in Australia and things like that, there was a lot of worry about the extinction of certain animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've actually found that, no, they're still alive. We still have them. Oof.
Definitely. I mean, if you want to move on to conservation, I've got a few other sciencey ones, but I'll come back to this one. Conservation. Designation 399 is a female grizzly bear who lives in Yellowstone Park. She's 24 years old, which is old for a bear. So basically, in bear terms, she's a great grandmother. And she, you know, back in 1975, grizzly bear numbers around Yellowstone dipped to below 150. They're now above 700, so that's a conservation effort as of 2020 that's reached that level. And this particular bear has came out of hibernation this year and gave birth to four cubs. And a four-cub litter for a bear of her age is unbelievable. And they reckon that at least 22 bears in that park are her descendants specifically.
That's amazing.
So the conservation efforts for something like a grizzly bear, and I know perhaps people are sitting there going, yeah, well, it's just bears and it's in another country and it's just one park, but that's the point. If someone can do something with their own little corner, then all these little corners will add up to something that is much better. Another one, blue whales are returning in great numbers to Antarctica. They've been out of the waters there, having been nearly hunted to extinction, but they're back.
Yes. That's the most amazing thing for me, is that sense.
Yeah, they do. So and there's other things as well. So I know we all talk about bankers and how they're like next to the devil kind of thing, but banks around the world have been donating huge amounts of fund to protect nature, to help ensure the Amazon rainforest, and to combat climate change. So we're talking millions and millions have been poured into it from banks. And yes, some of it might be them cleaning up their image, but honestly, I don't care, because that money's going somewhere it can actually do some good.
Yes. Yeah. Which is fantastic and remarkable.
And reminder that the Chinese government is not entirely evil, because Chinese officials are cracking down on illegal wildlife trade.
Ah, yes. That's that's definitely been a problem. No, it is good news that actually I think this year has been a bit of a shake-up. And this is not new in terms of, oh, suddenly we've all just started thinking about it. This is progressive good news, you know, the culmination of work over a long period of time. But it's very gratifying to start to see the movement happening.
Definitely.
All around these areas.
It's a reminder that not everything this year has been terrible.
Yeah.
You know?
Not everything's been,
Here's a trio that I actually really, really like, because this is a case of indigenous people who've been living there for hundreds of thousands of years, working with national and international conservation efforts. So there's the Xingu Seed Network, which is in Xingu, North Brazil, and you've got natives who, I mean, the huge swathes of the Amazon rainforest have disappeared there because they were cut down so that soybean farming could take place. Obviously, without the trees, the soil then became very poor and basically blew away. And then, you know, that's contributed to the rainforest fires and other things. But basically, what they're now doing is they're planting in a way that will promote better soil conversion. So, you know, in the same way that they've sort of done silt reclamation projects in the fens here in England, they're sort of reclaiming the soil over there by planting plants that are native to the area. And yes, it's a long-term project. It's going to be a long time before they can replant the trees and things, but reclaiming the soil is the first step. And it's the fact that there's this huge group community of people spread out across that huge area who are all collecting seeds and trading them with each other so that they get this sort of biodiversity of planting going on.
That is just fantastic.
So
and
I love
that
one.
It's great because there's a sense of community there.
Absolutely. And then, again, you've got a similar situation with the indigenous Kanak people of New Caledonia. A trust was established to protect 5,400 hectares of cloud forest on Mount Pane, and this is the wilderness reserve. And the main thing they're protecting there is a kauri plant, which is one of the oldest plants, in terms of how long it's been a viable species without having had to adapt or died out. It sort of goes back to sort of Mesozoic type times.
Wow. Okay.
And this particular indigenous people gets everything they need from the forest, but they've been working with, again, international trusts and things to set up conservation efforts.
This is brilliant. It's particularly nice to hear that native people who, you know, have been fighting for the survival of these natural areas have now been heard and are part of, you know, the plans and things like that to restore and to save these areas. Because, you know, this is their home. This is, you know, places which are often sacred to them. I mean, it's the same. This is going to be a very silly comparison, but there's an area around, I think it's around Horsham, where all of the community all kind of chipped in together in order to buy the village green.
No, it's exactly like that.
Yeah, they bought the village green to stop development happening on it. Now, I have personal feelings about the fact that we do need more houses, and the green belt has, you know, started to cause problems with that regard. But, well, I'm going to put my whole issue with the housing market to the side and prices and ridiculous things like that. I'm going to put that over there and say that that is an amazing thing where a community have basically turned around and said, this is, you know, this is for us. We need this area. We need this greenery for our health, for, you know, our children, for the good of nature and community and all those kinds of things. And they have come together in order to sort it out. Now, unfortunately, they all had to pay for it, which I think is a bit, that's a whole other issue. But it is fantastic when you see communities who have been able to kind of take charge again of their homes, their areas, their natural environment, and protect it and be heard and do something. That is very, very good, I think.
Definitely. There's also the Lau Islands near Fiji. Mm-hmm. Locals of Mavana Village have banded together to create a marine protected area around the Duff Reef. Mm-hmm. Home of loggerhead turtles. You can't visit at the moment due to COVID restrictions, but I think it's something like almost a 3 mile square stretch where they're protecting the coral reef and there's no fishing and things going on there. Which is, you know, protecting turtle environments. So again, it's a small thing. It's only a few species, but it's looking after our home effectively.
Yes, which is damn important.
Yeah,
very, very important.
Why are you saving the planet? Well, because I'm one of the people who lives there, type thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's one of my favourite moments in Guardians of the Galaxy. It's just like, what's the universe ever done for you? I don't know. I just happen to be one of the people who lives in it.
Okay, two final ones. And these are not the only good things that have happened this year, by the way. If you want to do your own searches, you can find things. I bet you'll find things that I haven't managed to turn up.
Mm.
I've got mixed feelings about these, because the minute someone says supercomputer, I'm like, oh, Skynet. A team in China has built the first ever photon-based quantum computer. It's 100 trillion times faster than a conventional supercomputer, which means that it can calculate in seconds what it would take a normal supercomputer about 2 billion years to calculate.
Okay, that is certainly very impressive.
Again, it's one of those, what can you do with this technology? You can do amazing things with it. You could also do terrible things with it, but I'm not going to focus on that now. Let's say, you know, this is good, potentially.
Potentially.
The second and last of my little points here is there's been a 96% drop in the cost of space travel. SpaceX have managed to send a manned rocket into space for only $62 million. Now, if that sounds like a lot, let's bear in mind that NASA's old space shuttle missions, which, you know, were much smaller, used to cost $1.5 billion per flight.
Ooh.
So it is coming down, and again, there's implications. Yes, I know Elon Musk talks about Mars a lot, and we need to get off world, etc., etc. But there's things like you could potentially fly from the UK to Australia in 90 minutes. You just take a little detour around the outside of the planet.
Yes, that will certainly change things. I mean, quicker travel, just in general, will change things.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You can't say that anything's universally good, although I would definitely say the conservation efforts are definitely good.
Yes, I would agree. The only time I have an issue with conservation efforts is when we start to get into the Frankenstein territory. It's like which, to be honest, they are doing. You know, they are looking at sort of bringing certain extinct animals back to life. But we're looking at recently extinct, not...
not Jurassic Park.
Let's build a dinosaur island!
It's like whenever anyone says, "Oh yeah, we should take mammoth DNA and put it in an enucleated ovum in a female elephant." I'm like, have you not seen Jurassic Park?
Have you learned?
No, it's a mammal,
nothing.
Not a reptile. But come on,
you should know better than this. They never
Anyways.
Learn.
So, you know. There are definitely lots of trials this year and lots of triumphs, and we've gone from the macrocosm, so looking at things that are going on around the world, to the microcosm, which is looking at what Matt and I personally have been doing in 2020.
Yes.
Let's talk about what we've both been writing a bit to start with, since, you know, we are writing podcasts.
Yes, indeed, yeah. So I think, earlier in the year, I finished editing my children's book, one of my children's books, and I have begun the long and laborious journey of trying to find an editor for it.
Yep.
But that has been a big step. At the same time, I've obviously been writing the Hamartia cycle. I'm now on book two of the Kestrel saga, nearing the sort of the end.
Are you? I didn't know you were near the end.
I said nearing. I said didn't say near the end. We're coming up there, okay? I've been doing that with book two. I've been working on a YA book, which has obviously been part of my dissertation, because I also completed my master's, which I got a distinction in my master's.
Hey.
Writing for children masters, thank you. So yeah, a lot of this year has actually been dedicated to teaching, which I've obviously been doing, and think as things moved online, it has changed things drastically. I definitely found I had a lot less time than I usually did, so I've been teaching a great deal, and I've been completing my master's, so that's where a lot of my writing effort has gone into it. But there have been successes otherwise. Jules, on the other hand.
I've kind of switched a little bit this year, because obviously last year I mostly wrote historical fiction. This year I knew I wanted to get back into writing urban fantasy again. I plotted out another set of books in the sort of King's Knight series, and I've theoretically got them greenlit, but I haven't got a contract yet, so I've sort of put them on the back burner for now.
Yeah.
They are going to get written one way or another. I've got other things also planned out. I'm really sorry to those people who I keep promising the second set of unveiled short stories, Crossing Places, to you. It is being worked on. It's just I kind of got really, really distracted by this new series I'm writing. I'm now one third of the way through Harker and Blackthorne, book 7. So...
yes.
It has been...
you cow.
It's been a joke. I didn't think I was going to get that. Honestly, I didn't set out thinking I'm going to write this many books. I thought maybe I'd get through 4.
Yeah.
But I had I really planned out the entire series, and I knew I wanted to get at least a few done. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, okay, I'm in lockdown now. There's a limit to how much I can do otherwise. So all my energy has kind of gone into this. I'm doing more, obviously, work type stuff as well.
Yeah.
And it's been amazing. I think what I've most enjoyed about it is that having the series planned out like this, yes, there's still plenty of surprises and plenty of moments when things have not gone how I thought they were going to go.
Yes.
But I can see, I know I'm putting something in a book, and it might just seem like a random little aside, but I know that that bit of information is going to be really important in about 4 books' time. And I'm really enjoying the process of creating a fully seeded series arc.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been lots of fun. And it's actually really nice to be writing basically adult fiction as well. No slur against YA, but I feel at the moment it's giving me a bit more scope for some things that I wanted to explore that perhaps weren't really suitable or relatable for young adult audience. that makes sense.
Absolutely, it makes sense. It's really something because I've obviously adored this series. I have been gobbling it up left, right and centre, just really, really enjoying it. And I can't wait, because I can't really talk about it that much. I've really, really enjoyed it. And I think I get completely what you mean in terms of sort of being able to explore things in greater scope. But for me as well, the thing that makes Harkrum Blackthorn special is that it feels like a very natural progression from the first books of the Unveiled series into this new, you know, this new book, which has got familiar characters but has a different tone. You know, there's been a great tonal shift just in general, but is just very, it works very well, I feel.
Thank you. I'm glad you've enjoyed them, because I do keep sending you the books to read. So that kind of helps. I haven't really talked very much about what it's about, so without spoilers, I will just say briefly that Harkrum Blackthorn is kind of a series of supernatural mysteries, mm-hmm. And they're sort of set around fringe science type stuff. So you have Amy, who's the youngest sister in the Unveiled novels, now in her early 20s and is struggling with the becoming a fully formed adult type thing. So you've got the normal human type stuff.
Yeah.
And a chance encounter means that she falls in with someone who is the daughter of a cryptid hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And in their quest to unravel what's going on and who's causing the deaths, they end up recruiting Steve, also from the Unveiled series, to sort of help them with the folklore historical side of things,
mm-hmm.
in solving this mystery. And the three of them end up forming this little trio of people who then go on and sort of like, well, okay, yes, we did almost die, but we also had a lot of fun, so maybe let's just do one more case and we'll head off up to Scotland. And not realising that Rebecca, the daughter of the cryptid hunter, has kind of already got to the stage where she's thinking, I think I might reopen my father's old business.
Yes.
And it goes on from there. It's going to be quite a long series, but the books are going to be shorter, so they're 80 to 90,000 words. So just a typical urban fantasy length. And you could read them in isolation, but if you read them one after the other, then you also get the benefit of the series arc as well, which is a lot of fun, I think, personally.
Yeah, no, I have really, really enjoyed watching things progress. This is also the series where Jules sent me, like, one snippet, and it was just there, like, right, well, that's my pairing now. And you were like, what? From this one snippet? I'm like, yup.
It's like, there's two paragraphs, and you're like, I feel there was a conversation there that needed to be had. I'm like, what?
How did you...
And she's absolutely adamant that this is going to happen as well.
I am 100% adamant, and I will not shut up about it. And, you know, frankly, I think I'm right. So once it comes out, guys, we can discuss it. I shall not give any spoilers right now, but I have my personal feelings toward this, and I will not let them go.
Yes. So anyway, my plan is over Christmas is to come up with a release schedule, which, you know, yes, I know people could probably go, but you've written all these books, why can't you release them all at once? And I'm like, mostly because they need formatting correctly and packaging and covers, etc., etc., etc. But also because I need to pay bills, so I'm really sorry I can't just throw them all out there. I've got to put them out there in the best order that's gonna help me, so that I can then write you more books in the future. So kind of a win-win thing.
And trust me, the anticipation of waiting for a few weeks will definitely make the next one all the sweeter.
But yeah, that was obviously the reason why I'm writing so many and then releasing them fairly close together, so that you're not going, I've got to wait a year for the next one.
Yeah.
Which I know people kind of had to do with some of the unfailed books, so.
Yeah. Oh, so, yes, very good news on that front. Okay, so in terms of actually what we've been reading and watching this year, it feels strange because I almost can't remember anything from this year, aside, of course, from The Witcher.
Yeah, which technically released last Christmas, so. But I mean, I think of it as it being a this year type thing as well.
Yeah, because I certainly didn't get to watch it until this year. So for me, it's very much this year. And that's really the only thing that comes to mind, because quite a few things have obviously been delayed in their release.
They have, but I'm going to say something now and you're going to go, oh yes.
Okay.
Umbrella Academy Season 2.
Yes. Yes, you're quite right. That has been brilliant. I've also really enjoyed Lucifer, the latest season, which came out this year. That was very, very good. Yeah, you're quite right. Oh, but I did really enjoy Season 2 of The Umbrella Academy.
I'm also 90% sure that you read Flight by Vanessa Harbour this year as well.
No, I actually read it. It was last year. I did read it last year. That is an enchanting, wonderful book, particularly if you sort of like horses, or you're just an animal lover in general, or you like stories set in during the World War. It just fantastic children's book, highly, highly recommended. I haven't actually done a lot of reading this year, bar your books.
I feel kind of bad about that, because who else could you send 5 books to one after another? You're just going... In fact, I've sent you 6.
And I've got number 6 waiting there, and I'm like, maybe I could start reading it. And I said, pace yourself, Madeline. You know, if you start, you'll be up all night reading it.
Yes, I'll save it for, well, if you get a quiet day over Christmas, then yeah, you don't quiet, have to do anything.
Quiet day. Wait for a day where you're not up to your ears in work, and then you can read it.
And also, you're going to get to the end of it, knowing you, and go, ah, possibly something slightly higher pitch, and it'll be Where's Book 7, and I'm like, I haven't quite finished it yet, so
yeah.
I'm hoping so I can finish Book 7 over Christmas. You are giving me time, and it's I'm 90% sure Book 8 is the one that you really want to get your hands on, and I have to do Book 7 first. I've obviously watched and read a lot of things this year. In fact, I've watched more than I thought I had, because I'm not really a television type person. I literally just kind of watch things in the evening with Alan. So it's normally stuff that we both enjoy, but a few mentions. So obviously I watched The Umbrella Academy too, really enjoyed that. We watched a film, The Old Guard, which was one of our recommendations, which was great. It was about immortals and it was just perfect. In fact, check out our previous recommendation for that one. I watched a few things that were a bit older, so I watched The Fall with Gillian Anderson, which is all about a woman who's brought in to help find a serial killer in Dublin. And it was amazing. It was so well acted. I'm still in two minds about the end and the fact that it had 3 seasons. And you'd think, oh God, how did they stream this out? But it was a really in-depth, nuanced look at A, how you could get to be that sort of person, and B, what sort of person you might become if you'd had a similar sort of damage, if you like, but you'd gone into the process of being the detective rather than being the perpetrator. And it was just really fascinating.
Yeah.
I also enjoyed The Bodyguard, which has Keely Hawes in it and a bloke whose name I can't remember, even though he was the main character, which is really bad. I've got so much worse actor names, I really have. But again, that was a really intelligent look at feeling disenfranchised, I think, but at the same time trying to show a balance between being disenfranchised, being someone who was an Afghanistan vet who comes back and joins the police force and is then kind of pushed from pillar to post and actually gets assigned a bodyguard role with a major member of parliament, Home Secretary, who is played by Keely Hawes, because she's had threats against her life. And it's all to do with sort of, the extreme Islamic type bombing.
Yeah.
Bombers and things like that. And it was, again, it would be so easy to take something like that and then say, well, they're other, they're not like us, it's their fault. And instead it was a really nuanced portrayal of how these things come about and the fact that it's a small minority within a subgroup.
Yeah.
So, again, really intelligently done, very clever.
Fantastic. Excellent.
It's been my year for serial killers because we watched Mindhunter, which was all about the CIA profiling methods, which was amazing. And I'm so upset that I think it's been cancelled. And aww, the one we watched most recently is Manhunt, the Unabomber, which was unbelievably poignant in a way. You'll be too young to remember the Unabomber because
this
was happening sort of during the mid to late 90s. Where he was just sending parcels and things out to people, supposedly at random, and then they'd explode. And they caused deaths and horrific injuries and things.
Yes, I do remember the people talking about it.
And it was looking at how they caught him and how he, again, became who he did. Mm. And it stayed with me for weeks afterwards. It was just so weirdly haunting. This was someone who'd clearly been really fucked with by the system, but at the same time was missing one vital component. He would have been harmless if he hadn't been fucked with.
Yeah.
Probably. But he did not have the ability to connect and empathise with other people, and he desperately wanted to because he was very lonely.
Mm.
And it was played by Paul Bettany and played incredibly well, and it was just a bit mind-blowing.
This is the problem with Paul Bettany.
Yes, he's played Chaucer. He's played everyone.
Because if it's Paul Bettany, I'm more likely to empathise. That's
the problem. Fair point. Book-wise, I could go on for ages because I think I've read 170 books this year now. But I want to say special thanks to Shauna Maguire, who has consistently turned out 4 books a year and has definitely made my 2020 better than it was. And also to Alex Bledsoe, who I kind of discovered this year. I read all of his Tufa, the Fairies of Sadieville type books. Mm-hmm. And from there I went on to his Eddie LaCrosse Sword Jockey mystery novels, which are brilliant. And I've just downloaded his 2 vampire books. I need him to write more books now because I'm running out of his backlist.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah, it has actually been, it's been a good year for book releases. It's actually been quite interesting, obviously, because, and we've mentioned this before, in terms of how book releases have changed in accordance to the way that, you know, COVID has struck. I actually think this has also been the year a lot for sort of animated things as well. Like Blood of Zeus came out. We had second season of Castlevania, which were both excellent. Very, very good. Yeah. Very enjoyable. And it's actually very nice to see more animated things coming out and being treated, you know, as adult content, no longer as animated is for children. So it has been very interesting, and obviously there have been delays in certain releases of things like that as well. But it's certainly not been, we've not skimped this year on content, that's for sure.
No, I mean, despite big cinema releases and things being pushed back, I mean, Wonder Woman, Dune, all things I'm looking forward to in the future.
Yeah.
It has been a good year for that. And let's not fail to mention the sterling work done by museums, libraries, Audible even, whereby they're making things available to people even during lockdown and even when people can't get out. Yeah, so you can take the virtual tours of museums, for example.
Yeah, and the National Theatre. What a fantastic work, guys. Just brilliant. Just fantastic to be able to have these kinds of things available from out of the archives. Big difference, I think. It's been brilliant.
Definitely. So, yes, it's been a bit of a year, but we're ending this largely on a note of hope, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do now is we're just going to say what we personally are most looking forward to next year, because why not start from a position of hope?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, number one thing is, of course, that we are going to be continuing with Dissecting Dragons.
Yep, definitely. you know, we haven't even begun to run out of things to talk about yet, you'll be pleased to know.
We haven't. This is the thing. We just,
we just don't. We
always find more. We find more.
So yeah, we will be back in 2021.
Yes, you can look forward to us on the first Friday of the new year. So you're not rid of us just yet. So that's definitely something that I'm personally very much looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to getting back into my writing next year, now that my studies have finished.
I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, it was amazing because the other day I sat down and I wrote out, you know, 1,500 words. Now, that doesn't seem like a great deal. You know, I can sometimes write out significantly more in one sitting, and Jules can just, you know, just rattle out incredible amounts. But I'm very out of practice because this entire year has almost exclusively been about editing content, not writing new content. So it's been a while since I've been working on a first draft of something. And it was incredible just to be able to sit down and create something entirely new rather than just be editing, which is a very different process, very kind of different part of the brain, really, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm really looking forward to just doing that and trying to get as much done as possible. Very excited.
Definitely. Obviously, I'm looking forward to Madeline doing more writing. It's not a selfish interest there at all, honestly. I'm looking forward to my own writing, obviously. I'm going to do some more historical next year as well, definitely. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to finding out how Parker and Blackthorne pans out.
Yes.
I know, I feel like I've been banging the drum and I shouldn't talk about it as much as I have, but... it's like, I'm really enjoying it. I think this could be something that people really enjoy. And I am really, really keen to get onto book 8, which I'm hoping to start in January, because there's certain things that I need answers to. I need to know.
There's certain things I need answers to too. Ah, very excited.
Do you have any resolutions for the new year?
Well, before we get to the resolutions, I feel like we should probably also mention some of the releases we might be looking forward to.
Oh, good point, yeah.
So this is going to be incredibly predictable, but I am so excited for the next Loch Lomora book, which I have been patiently waiting for. It was meant to be released this September, but it was delayed because of COVID. So it's going to be released next September. It should be, anyway, please. I'm very excited to read that. I can't wait. I am excited and facing it with great trepidation, the next A Court of Thorns and Roses book with Nesta and Cassian. Interested to see where that's going. I'm mostly just following it because I want to find out what happens to Lucien, whose book should hopefully come out another time, but I will be very interested to see what happens with Nessian and Castor.
The weird thing was, till you said that made perfect sense in my head.
Because Nessian, actually, I think, is their pairing name, so yeah. Nestor and Cassian.
See, that's going to be a make or break book for me, I think.
Yeah,
I've been hanging on, and you know, it's great that lots of other people have really loved everything with that one, but that's my sort of like, do not fuck this one up, please.
Yeah. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to Loch Lomora, as I said. I'm really looking forward to the Shadow and Bone series, which is coming out in April.
Yep. Me
too. That's going to be very exciting. Looking forward to the final bit of Lucifer, which, again, very, very excited to find out how that is all going to end. I'm looking forward to the next Harker and Blackthorn books.
I'm hope so. Looking
forward to seeing my ship sail. Hint, hint.
No guarantees. No guarantees. You'll have to tell me whether you think it's likely at the end of book six. We'll see.
Gosh, you do like to hurt me. So yeah, I'm looking forward to lots and lots of things next year. And I mean, I don't know when. I'm also looking forward to the final season of Fruits Basket, which should be released next year, which will be a very nice close to something which I cherished in my childhood. So
cool.
What about you?
The problem with getting advanced review copies is that you quite often read books the year before they come out. But I can tell you that there's some amazing books coming out next year. I'm reading Calculated Risks by Seanan McGuire at the moment, and it comes out next April. And I'm like, I already can't wait to get my paperback copy. Not least because she puts a playlist in the back, and I'm like, I love her playlists. I know that's a really weird reason to buy a hard copy of a book, but you also get like a little extra novella quite often if you buy a hard copy, so definitely worth having. Samantha Shannon's Bone Season series gets its fourth book, The Mask Falling, next year, and I read that this year, and it's amazing, and I'm still not over that ending, and there aren't many books where I read them, and what I want to do is then go back to the beginning of the series and just start reading them again immediately, but that's one of them.
Fantastic.
I'm hoping for some more Kestrel next year, hint hint.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I've quite become obnoxious about it yet, so I'm trying not to be, but you know, I can see it. I can see it on the horizon. I'm looking forward to Dune. I realise that in America, Dune and a bunch of other things that I'm really looking forward to watching have been released over Christmas on television. I'm not bitter about this at all, just because I live in the UK. But oh god. I'm looking forward to the new series of The Stand, which again is being released over Christmas in America. I'm sure we'll get it here eventually. I'm sure it'll be worth the wait. So, yes, yeah. There's a whole bunch of things. There's more books than I could possibly say, but I will just mention that I have three friends, I think, who have got their debut novels coming out next year. And one of them is a close friend of mine who lives in Australia, and her book is one that she was there for me at the very beginning with I Belong to the Earth, and I was there for hers, and hers is now just being published by Penguin Australia, and I'm really excited for her for that coming out, and then there's a couple of others as well. So you never know, you might get to meet some of them.
I am very excited about that then. Very much looking forward to that. Oh, lots of new things to come in 2021.
Definitely.
With that in mind, what do you have a resolution for 2021?
I've more got a loose, nebulous idea, as in I'm going to keep doing my thing of calling bullshit. So that includes like verifying news stories and things before hitting panic stations. I'm going to keep on my before you say anything nasty to somebody, at least think something kind about them thing. Honestly, it's a work in progress. I'm trying, okay? Being nice doesn't come naturally to me. I have to work at it a bit harder than most people. And yeah, I think the practicing gratitude thing, I'm going to try and make that more of a daily thing, because sometimes you can forget, and I find it really has really worked for me this year, so I'm going to continue that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can appreciate that. Sorry, that makes it sound like you're a total bitch. I do think that particularly during this time, and the fact that we are, you know, still within a pandemic, practicing gratitude is probably a fairly good thing. And I would probably agree that's something I'm going to be trying to push and continue on, at the very least, just for my own mental health, which is what I think is, you know, is important, is that practicing gratitude isn't about laying over and accepting what's happening to you, but about sort of understanding what you can do and what, you know, and sort of keeping the power within yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think for next year, one thing I really, really want to do for my resolution is to find the joy in writing again. And just actually enjoy the process.
Is that something that you feel you've lost a bit because you've been so editing focused?
Yes, I think so. And it's meant that when it's come to me writing stuff, I'm so concentrated on whether it's good or not, and I'm not really enjoying it. And that's been an incredible shame for me, because it's not something I've ever really had to contend with in my life, not to this extent, because I have always just enjoyed writing. And I think you have to have a certain confidence to write. And I think I've lost a great deal of that confidence. You know, it's been a difficult year in terms of that. It's been a difficult year for the industry. It's been a difficult year just in general. And, you know, when you're agent hunting, that means that you do have to deal with a lot of rejection, which is only natural. And I know that's part of the process, and I was ready for it. And this is not the first time I've had to deal with book rejections. But I think with everything else, it has started to sort of grind me down a little bit. And I have lost a little bit of the joy that comes with writing. Just the sheer pleasure of creating something and sharing it with my friends. So that is something I'm going to sort of be concentrating a little bit more on next year. Actually I'm going to try and finish at least 3 books. My YA, my adult fiction, which is Kestrel, book 2, and obviously the Hamartia cycle, book 3 as well, should get finished too. So I'm going to be finishing an adult, a new adult, and a YA book, hopefully, next year, and we'll kind of see what happens from there.
Awesome.
Okay, guys, well, all that's left is to have our Dissecting Dragons recommendation, our first one of 2021. And Jules, I believe that you have got one for us.
Yes, I am 70% of the way through this book, so I've very nearly finished, and I definitely would recommend it just based on the 70% I have read. Okay. Most unusually for me, this is not speculative fiction, this is non-fiction. It's called Humankind, A Hopeful History, and it's by Rutger Bregman, who is a Dutch person. And basically, it's a really eye-opening look at human nature. And it sort of deconstructs the myth that we are ultimately all selfish beings who will do what's best for ourselves. And in fact, that as a species, we're not really like that at all. That's what's sold to us because it sells better. And yes, we're capable of some atrocious acts, but there's a reason we get manipulated towards atrocity. So this is not in any way suggesting that we're not responsible for our own actions. We absolutely are. But it's a big picture look at how people get to that stage and what really happens when people are put in a crisis or put in a situation where somebody desperately needs help. It's entertaining and it's a quick read, in my opinion. And yeah, it's got a really nice tone to it. He doesn't dress up any of the atrocious parts of human nature. He also doesn't downplay any of the good stuff either. So I highly recommend this book. It's really, really good.
Excellent. It's very nice to actually have something which is, you know, not all doom and gloom.
Yes. Definitely.
Okay, guys. On that note, all that's left to be said is a very happy new year to you. May 2021 be good and joyous and full of opportunities, and just may things improve for you and your lot, and stay safe.
Yeah, and presumably you're listening to this at some point on New Year's Day or just after, but if you are on New Year's Day, I'm guessing you probably didn't get a big party last night, but if you had a little party by yourself and you're listening to this because you're hungover and you need something to do, we see you.
Hey, and maybe this is your party.
Maybe this is your party. Join us for an hour and a half of hope. Hope for the future.
Thanks very much for listening, guys, and we will see you later on in the year.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.